Welcome to the deep dive. We're switching things up a bit today.
Where?
Yeah, you guys asked for a deep dive into Psalm 106 using Dr. David Emanuel's insights from his work on Exodus Psalms.
Right.
Not our usual article or news story, but hey, biblical commentary can be pretty exciting too, don't you think?
Definitely. Especially with Psalm 106, it's got a lot going on.
Exactly. Plus, Dr. Emanuel argues that it was written during the Babylonian exile, which, wow, talk about adding another level of depth.
Yeah, the historical context really changes how you read it.
Totally. Okay, picture this. You're in exile, far from home, and feeling completely lost. That's the setting of this psalm.
Makes sense.
And unlike other Exodus psalms, which, you know, are usually celebrating freedom and victory, this one is more of a lament.
A lament.
Yeah, like a cry for help in the middle of all this hardship.
Oh, I see.
It makes you wonder, what was going on that made the psalmist so desperate?
Right. What pushed them to that point?
Well, that's where Dr. Emanuel's historical context comes in, right?
Yeah, the Babylonian exile was absolutely brutal for the Israelites.
Yeah.
I mean, their identity, their faith, everything was shaken.
Talk about a crisis of faith.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So this psalm becomes a raw expression of their pain, a plea to God to remember them, to intervene, to bring them home.
Wow. It's like we're overhearing someone pouring their heart out, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very raw and emotional.
And this theme of remembering and forgetting keeps coming up, almost like a warning. Remember God's actions. Good things happen. Forget them.
Uh-huh.
Well, exactly. What's the deal with memory being so central here? Is it just about history or something more?
It's definitely not just memorizing dates and facts.
Right.
Dr. Emanuel suggests it's about actively engaging with your relationship with God.
So keeping that connection alive, right?
Exactly. Remembering God's actions becomes an act of faithfulness. Recognizing that covenant, that sacred bond they have.
And forgetting, that's almost like turning your back on that relationship.
Almost like a betrayal, yeah.
Wow, okay, so it's way more than just history lessons.
Definitely not.
Now, another thing that jumped out at me, and Dr. Emanuel points this out too, is the use of I throughout this psalm.
Yeah, it's super personal.
It's like we're eavesdropping on a private conversation with God.
Right. Very intimate.
Definitely. What do you think is going on there?
Well, that personal voice, it's a confession of sin, asking for mercy. Just raw emotion.
It makes you feel like you're right there with them.
Absolutely. And while it is an individual voice, Dr. Emanuel argues it also represents the guilt of the entire people.
Like this one person speaking for a whole nation.
Yeah, and their hope for redemption too.
That's powerful. But then it gets even more interesting because Dr. Emanuel points out these figures, Moses and Phinehas.
Okay.
They act as these intercessors, like standing in the gap, preventing God's wrath through their actions.
That's an interesting way to put it.
Right. It's not just about miracles this time. It's about prayer actually changing things.
You're right. That's a shift. What do you make of that?
I don't know. It's making me think about how we view prayer.
For sure. It really highlights the importance of intercession in the Old Testament. How these individuals appealed to God on behalf of others. And by invoking those examples, the psalmist positions himself in that same role, trying to intercede for his people in exile.
So like saying, hey, God, you listen to them. Maybe you'll listen to me, too. That's a bold move.
Definitely bold. But hold on, because Dr. Emanuel throws us another curveball.
Oh, what now?
He noticed some key figures are missing from how the psalm tells certain events.
Like who?
Korah's gone from the Dathan and Abiram rebellion, and Aaron, poof, vanished from the golden calf incident.
Whoa, really?
Seriously. Makes you wonder, is the psalmist trying to shield their reputations a bit?
That's a good question. Like, why leave them out?
Right. It suggests this isn't just a straight-up historical retelling.
There's more to it.
Definitely. Dr. Emanuel brings up this idea of tikkun soferim, basically scribal correction.
Wait, so someone might have edited the text?
It's possible. Maybe scribes over time change things to protect the image of certain figures.
Wow.
Yeah, it adds a whole other level of complexity.
So the text itself could have evolved over time.
Exactly. Not just a static document. And speaking of changes, there's this whole thing with a plague.
A plague.
In the Psalms version of the Baal-Peor incident, a plague breaks out.
Okay.
But that detail is missing from the account in Numbers.
Huh. That's strange. Did the psalmist just make that up?
Not necessarily. Remember, the psalmists weren't just copying and pasting.
Sure.
They interpreted and sometimes even embellished stories to make a theological point.
So they took some creative liberties.
You could say that.
Yeah.
They used the stories to drive home a message. And then, talk about driving something home, Phinehas gets serious praise.
Phinehas?
Yeah, the psalm compares him to Abraham. It's saying his actions were reckoned as righteousness. That's high praise.
That is pretty major. But hang on, what exactly makes an action righteous? Is it just about the rules, or is there something more?
Ooh, great question. It's something Dr. Emmanuel wants us to think about.
Yeah, because there are different ways to interpret Phineas's actions, right?
Exactly, which highlights how complex righteousness can be. What's righteous in one situation might not be in another.
It's not always so black and white.
Not at all. Lots of nuances and different perspectives to consider.
For sure. And speaking of connections, Dr. Emmanuel points out this awesome link between Psalm 106 and the very next one, Psalm 107.
Oh, yeah. What's the connection?
The plea for deliverance at the end of 106. It's like it's answered right at the start of 107. Remember how 106 ends?
With a desperate plea for deliverance.
Exactly. And then 107 opens with, "Let the redeemed of the Lord say so." Chills, right?
You're right. That's pretty cool.
It's like someone knew exactly what they were doing when they put those two psalms together.
That's the power of redaction, right? The editors of the psalms weren't just throwing these poems together randomly.
No, it was intentional.
Totally. They arranged them to create dialogue, a sense of continuity, and hope.
So we're not just reading individual psalms, we're experiencing a conversation across centuries. It's like this huge story unfolding, and we get to be part of it.
That's a great way to put it. And this story, it speaks to a very human experience, you know?
What do you mean?
Well, we all go through periods of exile, whether it's literal or metaphorical. We all feel despair and want deliverance sometimes.
So even though it's thousands of years old, this song still speaks to us today.
Exactly. It connects to our struggles, our need for hope and redemption.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is amazing how those psalms connect.
Like a conversation still going on after all these years.
Totally.
But you know what? I'm still trying to wrap my head around with all this.
What's that?
This whole idea from Dr. Emmanuel that Psalm 106 is actually a carefully crafted argument.
Oh, yeah. He makes a strong case for that.
It's not just a historical retelling or just a personal lament.
It's more than that.
Like, it's trying to persuade us of something.
Exactly. Dr. Emmanuel says it's arguing for the power of intercession, the idea that we can appeal to God on behalf of others, and that God listens.
Okay, so it's like building a case using historical examples as evidence.
It's kind of like a legal case, yeah.
So it's like a lawyer highlighting only the good stuff, the evidence that supports their case.
Think about it. The psalm really emphasizes those moments when Moses and Phineas interceded, you know, stood in the gap for the people. And it kind of downplays or even skips over the mistakes of others.
It's deliberate, huh?
Very much so.
But why go to all that trouble? What's the point of shaping the narrative like that?
Well, by focusing on those successful acts of intercession, the psalmist is drawing a direct parallel to his own situation in exile.
He's saying, look, God, you listen to them, so maybe you'll listen to me too.
That's it. It's a powerful rhetorical strategy.
So he's using the past to influence the present.
Exactly. He's setting a precedent for his own prayer for deliverance.
Wow. I'm starting to see how this song works on so many different levels.
It's amazing, isn't it? And don't forget that personal I throughout the song.
Oh, right, right. That adds another layer too, doesn't it?
It totally does. It makes the plea feel so much more personal, you know?
It's not just some detached historical observation.
It's a heartfelt request from one person on behalf of an entire people.
Like he's bearing his soul to God, and through him, the soul of a nation.
Powerful imagery.
I know we can't get too deep into the scholarly weeds here, but Dr. Emmanuel does mention this concept of morphological illusion.
Ah, yes, that one.
And I gotta admit, that sounds a little intimidating. Can you break that down for us non-scholars?
Sure. Think of it like a literary Easter egg hunt. The psalmist uses words that sound similar to important terms from other parts of the Bible.
So there's like a hidden layer of meaning for people who know those other texts.
You got it. It's like a secret code embedded in the language itself.
That's so cool. Can you give us an example?
Dr. Emmanuel points out the word Mitzrayim, which means from his enemy. Now, that sounds an awful lot like Mitzrayim,
and that's
the Hebrew word for Egypt.
Oh, okay. Now I see where you're going with this.
While talking about the Exodus, the psalmist subtly links the exile experience to that earlier time of oppression.
He's connecting the Babylonians with the Egyptians. Sneaky.
It's clever, right?
It's brilliant. It shows that the same God who rescued the Israelites from Egypt can rescue them from Babylon, too.
It connects the past and the present in such a meaningful way.
Speaking of connections, remember that link we talked about between the ending of Psalm 106 and the beginning of 107?
Oh, you mean how Psalm 106 ends with a desperate plea for deliverance, And then Psalm 107 opens with, "Let the redeemed of the Lord say so."
Yeah, it's like a perfect setup and payoff.
It's like those two psalms were meant to be together.
Gives me chills every time.
It really highlights how redaction works. The editors didn't just randomly throw these poems together. They carefully arranged them to create this dialogue, this sense of continuity and hope.
It's like we're not just reading individual psalms. We're experiencing a conversation that's been going on for centuries.
And you know what else is fascinating about this larger narrative? It speaks to a very human experience.
In what way?
We all go through those periods of exile, whether it's literal or just metaphorical.
Like those times when we feel lost and alone.
Exactly. And we all experience moments of despair, longing for deliverance, for something to change.
So even though it was written thousands of years ago, this psalm still resonates with us today.
Absolutely. It connects to our own struggles, our need for hope and redemption.
That's pretty amazing when you think about it.
It really is. And it reminds us that we're not alone in those struggles.
Like even though we're separated by time, we're connected by those shared experiences.
Exactly. Just like the psalmist called on the examples of Moses and Phineas, we can also draw strength and inspiration from those who came before us, who faced their own exiles and found their way back to God.
It's like they're saying, we made it through, you can too.
Such a powerful message of hope and resilience.
It really is. But you know, there's another piece to this puzzle we haven't talked about yet.
Oh, fill me in.
This idea that Psalm 106 is placed within a specific group of psalms, the Book of Moses.
Yes. That adds another layer of meaning, doesn't it?
It does, but I have to admit, I'm not super familiar with that grouping. Can you explain what makes it the Book of Moses?
Absolutely. There are a couple of key reasons why Psalms 90 to 106 are often called the Book of Moses.
Okay, I'm all ears.
First off, that section starts with the prayer of Moses, the man of God.
That's the only psalm specifically attributed to Moses, right?
Yeah, it's like the headliner, the title track of the album.
Just the tone for the whole thing.
Exactly. And the second reason is that most of the references to Moses in the entire book of Psalms, well, they're all clustered in that section.
So it becomes this Moses-themed collection.
It's like a Moses anthology, highlighting his unique role in Israel's history.
But how does that connect back to Psalm 106, which isn't directly attributed to Moses?
Well, Dr. Emmanuel suggests it's about more than just Moses himself. This book of Moses also emphasizes the idea of God as king, the idea that God reigns supreme, even when there's no human king on the throne.
That makes sense, especially for Psalm 106. It was probably written during the Babylonian exile when the Davidic monarchy had collapsed.
You got it. By placing Psalm 106 within this book of Moses, the editors are subtly linking those pleas for deliverance from exile back to that earlier period of wandering in the wilderness.
When God was their only leader.
Precisely. It's a powerful reminder that God's sovereignty extends beyond human institutions, beyond any earthly kingdom.
So even in the midst of all the political chaos, God is still in control.
That's the message, loud and clear. It's a message of hope and resilience woven into the very fabric of the Psalter.
It really is amazing how these ancient texts can speak so directly to our modern experiences.
Yeah, it's incredible how relevant these ancient texts still feel today. But with all this talk about historical context and fancy literary techniques, I want to bring it back to you guys listening, you know?
Yeah. What does this all mean for us today?
Exactly. Why should we care about a psalm written thousands of years ago? What's the takeaway?
That's the big question, right? What makes this ancient text relevant to our lives today? Well, I think Psalm 106 has this powerful message about remembering.
Remembering. Remembering God's faithfulness, especially when things are tough. Remembering our own shortcomings, too.
Right. Acknowledging when we mess up.
Yeah. Recognizing that we need forgiveness and grace. And then remembering the power of intercession, too.
Praying for others, standing up for those who are hurting.
Exactly. It's a call to action. You know, not just reading these words, but actually letting them change how we live, how we relate to God, and how we treat each other.
Like we're part of something bigger.
Exactly. This huge story of faith that goes way back. And one more thing. Psalm 106 isn't just about individual piety. It's about communal responsibility.
We're all in this together.
Yeah, recognizing that we're interconnected, that we need each other. Just like Moses and Phineas interceded for the Israelites, we're called to do the same for each other.
So it's not just praying for ourselves, it's about caring for others too.
Exactly. And that's so relevant today in a world that can feel so divided.
Seriously. So as we wrap up this deep dive into Psalm 106, I want to leave you guys with a challenge, something to think about. Imagine you were writing a lament today.
Ooh, interesting.
What would you ask for? Who would inspire you? What experiences, yours and everyone else's, would shape how you ask for help.
Wow, that's a powerful question. Like stepping into the psalmist's shoes.
Right. Confronting your doubts, fears, and expressing your deepest desires for healing, for things to get better. Who knows, maybe just putting those feelings into words, giving voice to your struggles. That could be a prayer in itself.
A powerful way to connect with God.
So yeah, take some time to think about that. Maybe even try writing your own lament, a modern day one. You might be surprised by what comes out. And remember, even when things are rough, there's always hope, always a chance for things to change for the better. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring, keep searching, and keep the conversation going.